Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Rocky Flats scandal right after this message. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and the electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, that is New York and its agencies, operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Do you think your state is very far behind New York? And all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? You know, knowing how information is gathered, what information is stored, what information you want to keep personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, for more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call me, George Gordon, at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by simply calling that number. It's 417-273-4967 to order yours. Or if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click on the email and send me an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Rocky Flats nuclear arsenal. It's actually a 6,000-acre tract of ground from the 1950s until 1990, about 35, 40 years, they made triggers for nuclear weapons. It's probably a pretty good endeavor. I mean, after all, America needs a national security. But in the process, they spilled a little of the stuff. You know, it's like anything else in life. Accidents do happen. And a little of that plutonium and a little bit of this and a little bit of that got mixed in with the dirt. Some of it got flushed down the toilet, and some of it got washed off in showers, and one thing and another happened. And one day they woke up and said, gosh, we got a lot of contamination on this 6,000 acres. So the question arose, well, what are we going to do about that? And the answer is, we're going to turn it into a national park. So when you've got a problem, what you do is you turn it into a park. I understand that's what they're going to do up there in New York. You know, you got this landfill. I don't know, something kills, landfill or something on that order, fish kills or something like that. Anyway, I understand the other day that somebody said what they're going to do is take that dump and turn it into a park. Well, I guess that makes sense. After all, that's the solution that they came to with milk around the turn of the century, that dirty milk that was killing people. And so they said, gosh, we've got all these disease pathogens in the milk, so the solution is, one, clean up the milk, or two, pasteurize it and sell the dirty milk anyway. And so, of course, the obvious solution is just pasteurize it and sell the dirty milk. Now, it didn't occur to too many people, gee, let's produce clean milk. And the same thing is true here with Rocky Flats. You know, evidently the solution is, well, we can build a fence around it and keep people off of it so that they don't get contaminated or injured, or we can turn it into a national park and let people go out and play in it. So I guess we'll go play in the plutonium. Well, new studies show that low levels of radiation may be much more dangerous than previously believed, so that the cleanup and the decision to allow public access to the site should be reviewed. And the Department of Energy admits that the cleanup plans have been impacted by the Department of Energy's inability to review its own documents, which were seized during the FBI raid and which have remained under seal ever since. These Department of Energy technical documents should be released from the grand jury vault, and after the public and the regulators have reviewed them, independent verification of the cleanup should commence. Well, Brever also notes that Congressman Mark Udall has repeatedly asked the Department of Energy to allow her and others from the ambushed grand jury citizens investigation to go on site to show him, the Department of Energy, the regulators, and the media, the areas where contamination has been excluded from the cleanup plans and where we have information indicating that a threat of radiation exposure or contamination does exist. The Department of Energy refused. Shouldn't we ask the question, why would the Department of Energy want to refuse? I mean, after all, isn't it their job? Isn't that what government's for? Aren't they out there to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public? Remember that story out in Chernobyl over in Russia? You know, they had this power plant and it blew up and caused a lot of damage and killed a bunch of people and contaminated about 30 miles all the way around the plant. And then we had Three Mile Island. Remember that? Boy, there was a lot of fuss and furor over that, wasn't there? Now, why is it that the government wants to, I say the government, you know, that's the United States of America. You know, does the Congress know about this problem? Does the Department of Energy know about the problem? The Department of Justice? Does President Bush know about this? Has anybody ever told him? I mean, he gets briefed by the CIA and the FBI every morning. Has anybody ever walked in and said, hey, boss, by the way, there's a little problem out here in Colorado. Maybe we ought to bring it to your attention. And if the public officials know it, then why aren't they out there doing something to protect us? I mean, you know, I've got cattle here, and if my cow goes out and goes big in the middle of the creek, you know, the government just has fits. They just jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and go apoplectic on me, and they say, oh, we got to fine you or something. Yeah. Well, I don't know who was out here protecting the Indians and the public from the buffaloes. You know, they used to walk across creeks and go big in the creeks, and there wasn't anybody getting too excited about it. But, you know, here you've got nuclear waste, and this plutonium is the most deadly poison. I mean, it's worse than arsenic or strychnine. I mean, you just inhale a few molecules of this stuff, and it just gives you instant cancer of the lung. And you got this stuff buried 6 inches under the surface, as we'll see as we progress along here with this this report. The FBI got wind of it, went out, I don't know why they did it, but 1989 went out on a raid, gathered the evidence, took it to a grand jury, and then somebody, somewhere, put the kibosh to it, and it's been buried ever since. Now listen to this. Remember this John Lipsky is the FBI agent in charge. He's the guy that led the raid on the Rockwell International contractor there at Rocky Flats. Well, this is dated October the 24th, 2001, United States Congress, Washington, D.C. It's an open letter to the U.S. Congress. Here's the FBI agent. He says, I'm an FBI agent. My superiors have ordered me to lie about a criminal investigation that I headed up in 1989. We were investigating the U.S. Department of Energy, but the U.S. Department of Justice covered up the truth. I've refused to follow orders to lie about what really happened during the criminal investigation of Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. Instead, I've told the author of this book the truth. Her promise to me, if I told her what really happened, was that she'd put it in a book and tell Congress and the American people. Some dangerous decisions are now being made based upon what that government cover-up is all about, and please read this book. I believe you know what needs to happen. Respectfully, John Lipsky. That's from the first page of the Ambushed Grand Jury. That's a book you can buy. All right, now does the Congress know about the Rocky Flats problem? The FBI knows about it because the FBI told this guy that if he opens his mouth, he's in deep dirt. And then the Department of Justice knows about it because they're the ones that have the grand jury testimony and they locked it up. And the Department of Energy knows about it because they're the ones that lied about it and made the false reports to start with. I mean, what more does government need to know? You know, other than a mushroom cloud, you know, that sounds like it. Pretty well publicized, isn't it? Now, I don't see anybody getting very excited. John Kerry the other day said that Yucca Flats, or not Yucca, is it Yucca Flats down in Nevada? I think is what they call it, Yucca Mountain, I guess it is. Yucca Mountain. He said, not on my watch. Boy, we're not going to bury any of that nuclear waste down here in Nevada while I'm president. I got to ask you, boys and girls, does it make more sense to take an isolated mountain in Nevada? You know, irrespective of all you Nevadans down there, I can understand your consternation at all of the rest of us in the country taking our garbage and dumping it in your backyard. I hear you. But keep in mind that we out here in the rest of the United States are making a lot of garbage. And we got to have a place to put it because we don't want to live with it. And there's a lot more of us out here than there is of you there in Nevada. So does it make more sense to take an isolated mountain that doesn't interfere with the water table, bury this stuff 2 miles under the ground, or to bury it 6 inches under the ground 16 miles from downtown Denver, Colorado? You know, I just thought I'd throw that out there for you to consider. I mean, you're free, white, and 21. You ought to be able to figure out what it is, what the best answer is. My conclusion was, yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world to bury it 2 miles under a mountain someplace in southern Nevada. And furthermore, you want to tuck this one away in your heart, too. All the nuclear power plants in the country are doing the same thing that they did there in Colorado. They have to hang on to all that nuclear waste, all that spent nuclear waste, you know, that's been accumulating at all these nuclear power plants. It's right there at the nuclear power plant. Now, I think it's a lot harder for a terrorist to get hold of that stuff if it's buried in a mountain down at Yucca or Yucca Mountain, Nevada, than it is to get hold of that crap, you know, if it's sitting out here in a bunch of barrels in a nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island or someplace. Now, don't you? I just thought I'd throw that out for your consideration. Furthermore, the industries, you know, the electric utility company, they got to do something with that crap. They got to do something with it. It's physically there. Now, they all got together and said, well, we'd like to load it on a railroad car and ship it out to Nevada. The government said, that makes a lot of sense. Let's build us a site. And you got a bunch of greenies and others out here saying, oh, no, not here. What'd you want to do? Or what'd you want to do? Bury it under New York City? You know, it just seems like to me that we need a little reason, logic, and common sense here. And turning this nuclear site there in Colorado into a park with this hazardous waste all over, and especially with all the testimony, all the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence to document, is out there for the public to see. Now let's take an analysis of the Department of Energy's cleanup plans for the four areas at Rocky Flats, and the cover-up continues. Now, Jacques Brewer, B.S., Environmental Restoration and Waste Management, M.S., Environmental Policy and Management. I guess it's a female. From reading the story here, evidently it's a female. In the introduction, it says, the Department of Energy soon plans to announce completion of its cleanup of the former Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has already publicly released its preferred plans to allow hiking, biking, school field trips, well, that's a good one, and other public access to this Superfund site. And this is a Superfund nuclear waste cleanup site, soon to become the Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge, and it's relying on the Department of Energy to have properly cleaned up the contamination. Well, I can understand the Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, after all, Ranger Rick says, well, I know that these people will do the right thing. Well, at least we hope they're going to do the right thing. We've got to take a quick break. Hang on. We'll be right back with more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person houses papers and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can you have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how much this information is gathered and what information is stored, what information you want to keep personal and private, and that's what actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, then why don't you call me and ask for my free general law CD package. All you have to do is call the law school and ask for it. It's a four-hour program. It's entertaining. It's informative. It's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. And all you have to do is call the school at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, talking about Rocky Flats, in a recently published book, The Ambushed Grand Jury, we attempt to inform Congress and the public officials responsible for Rocky Flats about the dangers of opening this former nuclear weapons plant to recreation. Our concerns are due in large part to the data showing widespread contamination of the site and a pattern of practice by the Department of Energy of attempting to conceal it. Since publication of the book, we've made an in-depth study of the Department of Energy's cleanup plans, reviewing all of the pertinent cleanup documents, and we found that the DOE's pattern of concealment and deception continues and creates an increased risk of contamination of the public. Congressman Mark Udall has repeatedly asked the department to allow the author of this paper and others from the Ambushed Grand Jury Citizens Investigation to go on site to show him, the DOE, the regulators, and the media, the areas where the contamination has been excluded from the cleanup plans and where we have information indicating that a threat of radiation exposure or contamination exists. So there are plenty of witnesses that work there at the Rocky Flats plant who can identify the hazardous sites and point out that this is not on the map where you're planning to clean up, and they don't want to hear it. Now, we've examined four specific contaminated areas of the site, which are illustrative of the problems with the cleanup elsewhere at Rocky Flats. The DOE's own documents reveal that the cleanup of the East Spray Fields is based on false statements by DOE to the regulators and EPA and the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. So the EPA knows about it, DOE knows about it, and so does the Colorado Public Health Department. The FBI knows about it, the Department of Justice, and the Congress. And everybody's, you know, pretty knowledgeable of the cover-up and the chicanery that's going on. Now, I haven't heard anything in the news media. I didn't hear Dan Rather jumping up and down, pawing the ground, or biting the bushes and getting excited about this. The only guy that I see getting excited about it is Al Krebs. And if you'd like a copy of this report, I think if you emailed avkrebs at earthlink.net, he'd probably send it to you. To receive it, all you need is the name and address. Now, I don't think he sends these out by ordinary mail. I think they come over the internet, email. At least that's the way I get it. This is number 14, The Calamity Howler, published by A.V. Krebs at earthlink.net. It's easy. A-V-K-R-E-B-S. A.V. Krebs at earthlink.net. Send him your name and address. And he'll put you on the mailing list, and it's free of charge. Now, I recommend that you pay him $25 a month. And that's $300 a year. It's a newsletter that comes out weekly. It's called the Agribusiness Examiner, a weekly report on agricultural news and events. A little different than Acres USA, but it has a lot of news articles. I use quite a few of them from time to time. I like to promote AV as much as I can. I think it's a great public service, and after all, if you're poor and you can't afford it, you get it free, and if you can't afford it, why don't you send him $5, $10, $15, $20 a month and subscribe to it, and I think you'll be well satisfied with it. And in addition to that, you get the Calamity Howler. Now, you may not like his political view. You know, a lot of times people get excited, you know, about people's politics or their religion or something like that, and why don't you bury that and think about the information that you get. I read things all the time, you know, and I say, I think that guy's kind of dumb. I think that's kind of stupid. I don't believe that, and I wouldn't put that into practice and so on. But this guy Krebs has got a lot on the ball. He really does. I think that for a free newsletter, I don't think you can go wrong, can you? Remember, that's A.V. Krebs, A.V.K.R.E.B.S., @earthlink.net. That's easy enough to do. Just send him an email and say, hey, you heard it on the editorial review. George Gordon said that he recommended it, and the newsletter is free. Understand there's no obligation at all on my part. Would you please put me on the list? I think he'll do it. Did it for me. Did it for everybody that I know of. Now, again, AV has to make a living, doesn't he? He's got to get paid some way or another. He's got to pay his rent just like everybody else. And so if you could dig in your pocket, pull out a couple of bucks, I'm sure he'd appreciate it. In fact, I know he would. It's the way he makes his living. And it's these kinds of exposés that you get that you're not going to get from Dan Rather. That's my point. If it wasn't for Krebs, I wouldn't know about Rocky Flats either. So it's the underground press that actually keeps us informed as to what's going on. Now, if I lived in Denver, Colorado, I'd get the hell out of that place. And I'll tell you why. This cover-up is on a par with the Chernobyl explosion and meltdown. You know, when government goes to these kinds of lengths, you got 23 members of a grand jury. When the FBI comes to 23 grand jury members and says, if you breathe a word about what you heard in that grand jury hearing, we will prosecute you and put you in prison. That's an extreme. I mean, grand juries sit and they might recommend a prosecution and the prosecutor doesn't prosecute. Nothing to do about that. But when you get threatened by the FBI, our secret police here in America, you know, just in case you people around the world there didn't know what the FBI was, it's the secret police of the United States, which is just like the Gestapo did in Germany, or the KGB in Russia. Now, of course, we Americans don't see it that way because we live here with them all the time. They're our friends. They're the thin blue line that protects and serves. But when they come around and they threaten grand jury members, you know, just ordinary citizens over here, then that sends a signal to me and it says, say, there's more here than meets the eyeball. Now, when an FBI agent blows the whistle, writes a book, sends a letter to Congress and says, my God, they got plutonium buried 6 inches under the ground. And it's going to leach out. And then they're going to turn it into a park. And then they're lying and falsifying records. Well, they're covering it up to protect somebody. Are they protecting the executives and the head honchos there at Rockwell International? Are they protecting senators and representatives or other executive government officials? This thing was closed down under the Bush watch in 1992. Did he have something to do with it? You see, there's got to be more than meets the eyeball, otherwise they wouldn't be trying to hide it or cover it up. You know, we had Love Canal, and we had Times Beach, and you know, you got dioxin, and you got fish kill in the Great Lakes, and so on. And you got chemical plants down at the mouth of the Mississippi River, down around New Orleans, you know, that are polluting the river, and killing people with cancer. You know, we know that, and we report it, and you see it reported, and it's written about, but not Rocky Flats. And not to the extent of this cover-up. You know, this thing has got to be big. You know, if it was just an ordinary cover-up, then they're spending $1.16 million an acre to clean it up, $7 billion, and they expected that it was going to cost $36 billion and take 60 years. The original estimate was, hey, this thing will take 60 years to clean up. Well, I wouldn't doubt that. I wouldn't doubt that it would take $36 billion and 60 years if they were going to clean it up, but obviously they're not cleaning it up, as the report clearly shows. And the cover-up of it, that's the thing. See, if they just went out there and started cleaning it up, we'd say, well, it's just another hazard of war. I mean, after all, we had to have the nuclear weapons, didn't we? This has been going on for 40 years. So, okay, so it made a big mess and we got to clean it up. I don't think that that's a big problem, but there's something more to this story, don't you think? Now, we've examined four specific contaminated areas at the site, which are illustrative of the problems with the cleanup elsewhere at Rocky Flats. Now, these false statements have caused the majority of the East spray fields repeatedly spray irrigated during the 1980s with sewage treatment plant effluent contaminated with radioactive and toxic waste. Now, it's been excluded from the cleanup. Question is why? DOE is also totally excluded from the cleanup to other areas of known contamination, and that's the Building 771 Duck Pond and the landfill near the wind site. This Building 771 is the building where they had so much of the plutonium that they lost. The building burned down. They went off like Chernobyl and spread this radiation all over. Of course, they're not talking about that, and they don't want to clean it up, so they're just going to bury it. And they're not burying it very deep. They're not like talking about 2 miles underground, talking about 6 inches. Now, at many other locations at Rocky Flats, the DOE cleanup plans also leave radioactive and toxic wastes in place, both within and adjacent to the wildlife refuge. Now, based on the claim that the contamination will not reach people using the site, and yet this claim is brought into question by the department's admissions elsewhere in the cleanup documents. Thus, the DOE's cleanup is of great concern because recent studies show that low doses of radioactivity may be much more dangerous than they were previously thought. In fact, based on these recent studies, the levels of radioactive contamination that the department is permitted to leave in the surface soils may not be protective of human health and should be reevaluated before the public is allowed access. Now, we provide this information to the public, the media, the regulators, the Department of Energy, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in an attempt to avoid still further harm to the public from the DOE's continuing cover-up at Rocky Flats. The DOE's cleanup of the East Sprayfields is based on false statements and a false permit application and excludes the most dangerous contaminants and the majority of the contaminated area from the cleanup. The DOE made false statements to the regulators and the public about the East Sprayfields cleanup. And to determine what type of cleanup would be necessary for the East Sprayfields, the DOE first had to determine whether there were any radioactive or toxic contaminants in the sewage treatment plant, the effluent which had been sprayed on them. So the DOE did this by using old sampling data from the 1980s. They advised the regulators that the analysis of treated sanitary effluent discharged in pond B3 and actual analysis of the pond water are representative of the water applied to the East Spray Fields. The quoted statement from the DOE is false, as evidenced by the witnesses that testified to the grand jury. Furthermore, there was documents and documentation of it all, and the documents have been locked up. The documents were well known to the witnesses. Some of them testified that they're the ones that wrote up the reports and said, hey, listen, this is what's going on. So we know that this is false, and yet it's being covered up. And it isn't just one agency. You know, it's the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's the Department of Health of Colorado. It's the Congress of the United States, the Department of Justice, the Department of Energy. Come on, guys. Let's grow up. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. The effluent was analyzed only for the constituents which DOE was allowed by its National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit to discharge to the sewage treatment plant. So they're the fox guarding the hen house. So what was discharged? Oh, we discharged those things that were included in our permit. Did you discharge anything that wasn't in the permit? Oh, no, we didn't do that. And then when they got caught doing it, they got caught with their arm in the cookie jar, they locked them up, threatened the grand jurors, and have been stonewalling it ever since. Hang on, we got to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. Well, as part of a lengthy cleanup of the former Rocky Flats Weapons Complex, demolition began at a highly contaminated building where workers once handled highly radioactive materials used in triggers for nuclear weapons. Leaks, spills, and a 1957 fire plagued the structure. It's building 771, and part of it was closed 30 years ago because radiation levels were off the charts. In 1994, the Department of Energy called the building its greatest vulnerability because of the buildup of contamination. Rocky Flats started producing plutonium triggers in the 1950s. It was closed in 1989 when safety violations led to a raid by federal agents. Work began in 1994 to decommission the complex and the site, which includes 6,000 acres of open space, and it will eventually be turned over to the Fish and Wildlife Service. Half of the roughly 800 buildings that made up the sprawling complex have been dismantled. Completion is expected by December of 2006. Department of Energy officials originally estimated the cleanup costs would be $36 billion and take up to 60 years to complete. But the final cost will probably be less than $7 billion, and the time, less than 10 years. The faster pace has led critics to question whether proper precautions are being taken and if the Kaiser Hill Company in charge of the cleanup is more interested in earning hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses for finishing ahead of schedule. Kaiser Hill has defended its safety record, and state and federal officials express confidence that proper procedures are being followed. So they assure us. Now, this is the same government now, same government that assured us that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, remember? I mean, you can decide for yourself, is the government trustworthy? Can you believe a government that ships war material on the Lusitania and then tells you, no, we're neutral and we're not shipping this stuff on a passenger liner? That's what they did in 1915. Then in 1941, they assured us that Pearl Harbor was a sneak attack and those dirty Japs over there deserved what they got. And then we found out after the war that Roosevelt knew that the attack was coming and left those 3,000 Marines and soldiers and sailors in harm's way, and they got killed. Makes you kind of wonder about the trade towers over here. Did the government really know more than they're telling us? And then there's the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. You remember that? I mean, this is the government that lies to us constantly. And yet, when we get these reports, they come out and say, oh, we're telling you the straight skinny. Now, this is one of those kind of deals where, after the fact, 1989 to 1992, I mean, you know, we're talking about 10, 12 years ago, aren't we? 15 years ago. And you got 23 members of the grand jury. They saw and heard the evidence. They listened to the witnesses testify. Now, the secrecy has been muted, you know, into an instrument of self-preservation. What they do is they come along and say, well, these are nuclear secrets, you know, and atomic secrecy has corrupted the American democracy, and the rationale for this corroding secrecy has always been national security, the need to keep powerful information from falling into the hands of the current U.S. enemy. Nuclear scientists even today regard the Q security clearance as a badge of honor, even while it signifies a determination not to spill the truth. But now secrecy has mutated into an instrument of self-preservation, not for the security of the nation, but for the profits of the nuclear industry. The keeping of secrets has evolved into the telling of lies, and the deception is being perpetrated not on the enemies of the United States, but on its taxpaying citizens whose contributions finance U.S. atomic atrocities and then line the coffers of nuclear profiteers. Now, the reason for this secrecy and deception has also changed. You see, the nuclear industry's greatest fear is no longer of an enemy. It fears instead that the truth about the environmental and health effects of radiation, if fully conveyed to the American people, will result in the collapse of the nuclear industry with its profitability. Now, it especially is fearful of what might happen when the American public learns the truth about depleted uranium. It's called DU munitions. Therefore, U.S. officials and nuclear industrialists repeatedly and strategically misrepresent depleted uranium's deadly impact on nature and humanity. They claim that DU is too feebly radioactive to be harmful to life, and they claim that DU cannot be considered a poison because only its hardness and its readiness to catch fire, not its radioactivity or its heavy metal toxicity, are exploited in DU weaponry. They emphasize that DU is depleted, since a tiny fraction of a more radioactive isotope has been removed. They claim that their only source of DU is mined uranium minus that fissionable isotope. They ignore how easily radioactive dust can be inhaled and claim that DU radiation cannot reach the bone marrow or cause leukemia because it cannot penetrate the skin. And they keep the medical records of the sick Gulf War veterans locked away in secrecy. And they suggest that the Gulf War syndrome is a figment of the imagination of 10,000 dead and 250,000 sick veterans that came back from the first Gulf War. You remember that? Gulf War syndrome, they call it. We got the same problem going on over here with these depleted uranium stocks infecting our soldiers today in Iraq. Do you think that this might be a part of a bigger overall plan? You know, sometimes I listen to people and they say, well, our government wouldn't do that to our own soldiers. Why, we need those soldiers to protect America. Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think we need those soldiers to protect America. But let me ask you this. If you had a secret agenda and you wanted to destroy a civilization or a society, how would you go about doing that? How do you take a world-ruling empire like the Roman Empire and destroy it? It did happen, remember? How do you take a world-ruling empire like Egypt and destroy it? Well, that happened too, didn't it? And the British Empire? That happened, didn't it? So if you were going to destroy the United States of America, what would you do? How would you do it? Would you take them on, you know, draw a line in the sand and say, okay, we're coming over? Or would you infiltrate their organizations? Maybe it would be good if you could poison the people's water supply with fluoride and chlorine. I mean, that would be helpful, wouldn't it? If you could depress the people's immune system so that they would be vulnerable to disease. Remember back in 1918, Americans, 60% of us were symptom-free. It wasn't good. 40% of us were sick. But today, it's 99% of Americans have symptoms of something. I mean, you got rotten teeth, you can't hear, you wear glasses, you've got allergies, or you got something more serious like diabetes. Now, remember, diabetes has doubled over the last 20 years. And the consumption of soda pop has doubled over the last 20 years. Wouldn't you want to face an enemy that was totally dependent upon insulin and we're all diabetics? I mean, you know, if you were a foreign army and you wanted to attack an enemy, you wanted to destroy an enemy, wouldn't it be easier to destroy a nation of diabetics than it would a nation of healthy, hearty people? So if you could infiltrate that government, and if you could create policies, and if you could create policies at the national level which would impair the health of the people of the nation, I mean, convert all of the people of the nation or as many as possible to wheelchairs. Instead of healthy, vibrant people, you'd have a nation of couch potatoes, 27% of which were obese, eating French fries and McDonald's fat and washing it down with Coca-Cola. A nation of diabetics. And then would it help you if the army of that nation was spread out into 130 countries and they didn't have any soldiers at home so that you could attack them with three National Guard divisions from Mexico across the Rio Grande River and defeat the whole nation of wheelchair pushers and diabetics? No, I can see that it makes all the sense in the world for the American government to pursue policies of depleted uranium in Iraq twice.
because the first Gulf War veterans that are coming home have mutated children. Have you heard of the birth defects that are coming out of those soldiers who have been exposed to low-level depleted uranium munitions in the first Gulf War? Well, I think it makes all the sense in the world to take the healthiest, strongest people in your society and destroy the gene pool. Makes sense to me. Now, of course, it doesn't make sense unless you're trying to destroy that society, does it? Now, you read the papers just like I do. You know we use depleted uranium. You know the soldiers coming back from Iraq have genetic mutations. You know that their chromosomes are screwed up, and it's screwed up from the radiation. Well, what did you expect the government to do? Come out and fess up and admit, yes, we're trying to destroy your society. Yes, we're trying to overthrow your government. Yes, we are a Trojan horse sitting in the White House and in the Congress. No, they're going to come out and they're going to say, gee, you know, we've examined this and we've done everything that we could. And everything's fine and we're following the rules. And we can't explain that Gulf War syndrome, even though we're hiding all of the evidence. We can't explain Rocky Flats, and that's why we're hiding all the evidence. You know, boys and girls, wake up, wake up. What your government is doing here isn't in your best interest. You know, you ought to start asking yourself, well, if it's not in my best interest, why are they doing it? Therefore, U.S. officials and nuclear industrialists repeatedly and strategically misrepresent depleted uranium's deadly impact. And they emphasize that the DU is depleted. It is. It's depleted. They're not lying to you. They're just not telling you what the non-depleted portion of it does to you. Out of the many half-truths that they have constructed, one big deliberate lie, because they know, and they have always known, the extreme danger of depleted uranium, and they care more about continuing to exploit its destructive potential than about protecting their own citizens, protecting their own soldiers, and all of the world's living things from its devastating effects. In a treatise on military weapons containing the radioactive material depleted uranium, Dr. Albert Schott and Domenico A. Lopez and John M. LaForge have a horrifying truth to tell. So there's a treatise on military weapons containing the radioactive material. It's called Depleted Uranium. It's written by Schott, Lopez, and LaForge. All right, we got to take another break here before we finish up here on depleted uranium and the Rocky Flats story. So hang on, stand by. I'll be right back right after this message. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks? Attacks that come from government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out our substance. Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that you and I have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours right now by simply calling 1-800. No, I'm not one of those 1-800 guys that you got to pay for the phone call. Just call 417-273-4967. You can order yours today. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website. That's free. And just go to georgegordon.org, click on the email, and request your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, the 1989 to 1992 Rocky Flats grand jury investigation revealed that from the mid-1980s until 89, the Department of Energy regularly discharged various industrial and hazardous wastes into the sewage treatment plant. That included industrial wastewaters, photographic developers and fixtures, contaminated cooling tower blowdown, that's radioactive, contaminated laundry water, acid, rinse waters, and sump wastes, and they accounted for about 10% of all of the wastes that were sent to the sewage treatment plant. Well, in a resolution of the Rocky Flats grand jury criminal investigation of DOE and its contractor, Rockwell International, Rockwell pleaded guilty to discharging the toxic and hazardous substances into the sewage treatment plant. And ultimately, they were fined $18 million. Now, let me take you through this one for a minute. I don't have the numbers here in this report as to how much money Rockwell made running that plant for the government. But, you know, you see what's going on here with Halliburton, don't you? Halliburton, you know, the oil company. Actually, they're an oil service company. I don't think they drill for oil, but they sell the material, the equipment to drill for oil. Well, they've got other businesses, you know, like Brown & Root and so on, and they're over in Iraq, and they're They've got government contracts over there to feed the truth and troops and wash their clothes and haul stuff, and you know, and it was a no-bid contract. I mean, the government just gave it to them. They said, well, come on over here, and here's the check. You just fill in the amount, and it's already signed, and you just go to the bank and cash it. And then, of course, you and I are expected to pay for that. Well, this Rockwall International's got one of those sweetheart deals. I don't know if they bid for it or not, but they got the contract. Now, it's going to cost $7 billion to clean up their mess. Do you think that over that period of time they might have made $7 billion or $14 or $21 billion? You know, my common sense says if it cost $7 billion to clean it up, they must have made that much or more while they were making it. Don't you think? Typically, cleanup doesn't cost as much as building plants and materials and making the product. Now, we don't know what it costs to manufacture a nuclear weapon. We don't know what it costs for the CIA. Those are off-budget items. Did you know that? Sure. We don't want our enemies to know how much a hydrogen bomb costs, and so we don't publish that. That's top secret. We don't want our enemies to know how many CIA agents we have or what their budget is, and so that's all kept secret. Now, when Rockwall comes in and pleads guilty and pays an $18 million fine, you know, to you and I, truck drivers, and plumbers and carpenters and electricians, we say, wow, that's a lot of money. $18 million. Sock it to them. Give it to them. They deserve it. They need to pay that fine. Well, the boys and girls, where did Rockwall International get that $18 million to pay that fine? Wasn't it from you, the taxpayers? And so you can sit there and say, well, yeah, well, we're going to get back some of our money, $18 million. Let's just take $7 billion because that's $7,000 million. $7,000 million. And what is $18 million? What percent of $7,000 million is that? Well, you take 18, then you divide that by 7,000. And it comes out to 0.0025%. I mean, it's 0.02571%. I mean, we're not even talking about 1%. We're not even talking about 0.1%. We're down here talking about 0.02001%. Put another way, if you could go out and make $7,000 illegally, selling drugs or whatever it is that you're doing, but whatever it is, it's criminal, and you're violating the law, and you're a bad guy, and you make $7,000, but you get caught. And we take you into court, and the judge says to you, well, okay, you dirty bad guy, going out here and making all this money and stealing from all these people, we're going to fine you $18. Come on, $18. That's what we're going to fine you. What would you think of that? Would it deter you? Would you stop? Would you quit? I've used this a time or two. You know, California has had, I don't know if they still do or not, but they used to have a law in the books that required you to identify yourself to a policeman. And it was declared to be unconstitutional in a case called, I kind of forget the name of it, but anyway, this guy Lawson versus Colander was the name of the case, and this guy Lawson over here collected $130,000. Now, California had that law in the books, and they were California is got this law in the books, and it's a criminal law, and the Supreme Court declares the law to be unconstitutional. Can you follow that? Now, California is collecting thousands, you know, from thousands of people every year, and they fine them $75 or $100. In fact, I think, as I recall, right, they were collecting about 6 million cases a year. In other words, police in California would arrest 6 million people, fine them $75 or $100 a year for violating this law. And then about once every 10, 20, or 30 years, there's a guy that comes in, sues, and collects $130,000. Now, if you were making millions of dollars, I don't know if they were making 6 million or they were passing out 6 million tickets or whatever it is, but, you know, we're talking about millions of dollars, and this guy, once in a while, California has to pay out $130,000. Would you take that product out of your product line? Now, boys and girls, when you see these guys getting fined, you know, millions of dollars, Archer Daniels Midland the other day paid a $400 million fine. You know, $400 million is a big chunk of change. I don't deny it. But, you know, these guys are making billions, and a billion is 1,000 million. They're out here. They come in. They plead guilty to breaking these laws. Laws that if you and I broke, they'd lock us up in prison for 5, 10, 15 years. None of these executives ever goes to jail. I've never heard of one. If these guys at Enron go to jail, you know, look at Martha Stewart. She didn't do anything worth talking about, but she's going to spend what in jail? I don't know, 18 months, something like that. You know, you take some guy down here on the street, he's selling a little pot. They lock a guy up like that for 5 or 10 years. He's doing the country a public service, if you stop and think about it. He's selling marijuana on the street for $80 for a quarter of an ounce. When you go to the doctor and get a prescription, it costs you 25 times that. That's why the government's so uptight about illegal drug sales. My God, it isn't that you people can't have marijuana, cocaine, and morphine and heroin. All you have to do is go to the doctor, and he'll give you a prescription for Valium and Ritalin. And what the hell do you think that stuff is? It's just that it costs you 25 times more. So the recreational drug people, you know, they're sitting there saying, why should we pay 25 times what it's going to cost us down on the street to buy this stuff from a doctor when we can buy it from good old Joe down here and save 25 times. That's not 25%. That's 2,500%. It's 25 times. You know, the government is a criminal enterprise. It's a big mafia enterprise. It's a corporation. It's a corporation with a monopoly, and all the people of America love the monopoly, and they support it. They vote for it. I mean, this is a monopoly where you get to vote for the chairman of the board. He's called the president. You see, you don't get to vote for a mafia, Don. But in this corporation, you get to vote for them. And it creates public policy. Now, for the old people, they like this corporation because they can go to the corporation and they can say, we want free drugs for the elderly. The government comes along and says, well, gosh, we got about 50 million of these elderly voters out here. If we give them free drugs and keep them stoned all the time, they'd vote for us. And so you got all these old people that are stoned out of their minds on every kind of legal drug that you can imagine. I mean, these old people, I see them on Dan Rather every once in a while, and they're crying the blues about their drugs. They can have 10, 15 different pill bottles sitting in front of them. Oh, my God, I don't know how I'm going to pay for my cocaine and my medicines if I don't get free public assistance. And so the government comes along and gives them free public assistance. Get this. Then, did you notice that the government wrote into this drug bill, you got to buy these drugs in the United States. You can't go to Canada and get them for half price. These same drugs sell in Mexico for one-tenth the price they do in the United States. And you know the drug company ain't giving them away in Mexico or Canada, don't you? So they've got a full Keystone markup and their drugs down in Mexico. They sell the same drugs here in the United States. And then they tell you they're unsafe and that you can't buy them across the border. Not only is the United States criminal, it's a criminal drug cartel which supports the pharmaceutical industry. You got it. The FDA is their agent. God just works like a shot. Now take a look at this Rocky Flats story. You got the same thing going on here. You got the nuclear energy industry. The nuclear industry makes billions of dollars off the taxpayers. And then when they get caught with their fingers in the cookie jar, they get protected by the Department of Energy. And then the citizens that sit on the grand jury get threatened by the secret police. You open your mouth and we'll prosecute you and put you in jail. But to their credit, some of the members of the grand jury, I don't know if all of them did or not, but some of them blew the whistle. This FBI agent over here says, hell, I ain't lying for you crooks. And he went in and said, hey, listen, let me tell you where it's at. Surprisingly, this guy's still an FBI agent. Remember, you can get this report from A.V. Krebs. So remember where you heard it. It's A.V.K.R.E.B.S. at earthlink.net. A.V. Krebs, earthlink.net to receive. Just send your name and address. Comes right over your email. All right, I'm about out of time here, so keep in mind that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on the internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. Remember, The Law Hour is an educational service that's brought to you in the public interest. All right, I'm just about out of time. I'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Of course, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.